Oh, thank you.
I think everybody thinks you're lovely because they don't know the full truth.
Give them time, Nikki. Oh my God, the voices of you're such an idiot, you're such a failure, oh, why have you done this? Typical you started. Actually, I hope to goodness it was completely dead because my language would have shut that station down.
But it's that cringing, squirming. You do want the ground to open up and just disappear down into it. I don't know whoever first came up with that phrase, but it's so descriptive of the feeling you have. You just want to hide. You just want,
yes,
don't want to be
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. I've got to be Wonder Woman all the time. But you know what? My cape's in the wash, Nikki.
Hurrah! Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Nikki, and hi, everyone listening. Good to have you along. So, Nikki, how have you been in the last couple of weeks?
Well, I've had a recent experience that I thought might be useful to dig around in, which involves a bit of shame.
Okay.
So, we recently, as you know, had our dress rehearsal for our UK competition.
Okay.
And we were in the church doing the dress rehearsal with a big audience. And at one point, the chorus retired to the vestry while some quartets performed for the audience. Some of our lovely friends were out there doing their thing. And I thought, oh, it'd be lovely to record them, because I am the recording bod for the chorus generally. So I put my phone out there and I checked the alarms were off and that was fine. And we were sitting in the back just listening to their lovely sound. And then there's an alarm going off in the church.
Oh, yeah.
And I sat there for a split second and I thought, oh, that sounds like mine. So in my high heels, trying to tread really carefully so I didn't make a noise, I sort of nipped out. Fortunately, the phone was at the side, so I wasn't seen by everybody. It was behind a pillar. And I grabbed it and it had gone on for about 15 seconds, right in the middle of one of their touching ballads.
Oh, I did feel for you, I have to say, because I recognised your alarm and I thought, oh, that's Nikki's.
Oh, so I grabbed it. I didn't actually panic. I rushed, but I didn't panic, which impressed me no end. So I grabbed the damn thing and switched it off very quickly. Fortunately, I've had experience of alarms going off when they shouldn't, so I knew I had to turn it off very quickly. And sort of slinked, or whatever the word is, back into the vestry with it. And, oh, it wasn't the end of the world, but I just felt awful.
Yeah.
And, oh, that ground open, or paving slabs or whatever they are in the church, just open up and just let me disappear. So that was a reminder of that awful feeling of shame. And I thought it might be something that we could look into.
Definitely. So how did you deal with it afterwards?
Well, I am pretty proud, actually, of the fact that I didn't go down that death spiral of shame and keep ruminating on it. I dealt with it, actually. This is a bit similar to other things we've talked about in the past. I came and sat down and sort of shrank to as small as possible. Sort of looked around and nobody was really looking at me as if I was the devil, but I did feel slightly in that direction. So I sat down and I thought about it and I thought, And I just sort of felt it, allowed myself to feel it a bit.
Yeah.
And what was the feeling in my body? Do you know, I'm not entirely sure. I'd need to think about it, but I allowed myself to be just for a bit and just, look, I'm closing my eyes now. I'm thinking,
yeah.
Oh, screwing up my eyes and thinking, oh no, you can see.
Did you have that sort of, that's it, I need to leave the chorus and move to another country? And
well, I would say that had it happened 5 years ago, I probably would. Yes.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have
yeah.
seen me for dust. I'd have been out of the back and in the car. No, I sort of talked myself through it a bit and thought, okay, this happened. Nobody died, apart from me. No, nobody died. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Just fess up. Okay. Because the members of the quartet had their back to me. They didn't even realise it was my phone. I found out later, but I assumed they'd all know it was mine, like you knew it was mine.
Yeah.
So in the next break, said quartet came into the vestry area and I just said, or actually it was at the end because I didn't have a chance to talk to them. And I just said, when we were all clearing up at the end, and I just said to a couple of the members of it, I am so sorry for the alarm going off. And the first one said, oh, was that your alarm? I thought, damn, I could have got away with it. No, I said, yes, it was, I'm afraid. And she said, oh, that's all right. That's fine. These things happen, kind of thing. And then I said it to someone else and I was really expecting, you know, I don't know what I was expecting, but at the very least, a sort of a gritted teeth. And it was like, oh, it's fine. Really? And that was so lovely of them to be like that. And it sort of helped me release it. So the two things there, three things, I suppose. I sat with it. I didn't really plummet.
Yeah.
I waited until I could do something about it, stuck my head above the parapet and waited for the explosion. And actually, there wasn't an explosion. It was all very lovely.
It reminds me of No One Cares.
Again.
You know, it's us chewing ourselves up to be perfect, and any slight slip from that can cause those feelings of shame that are often historic, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we want to be perfect. We want to present us. Well, do we? That's a good question. That's a starting point. I'm saying that we want to present ourselves as perfect. I know I do. I think for me, it comes from this growing up and finding everything so difficult and not really being very good at anything. And being very aware of the chaos around me, always forgetting things, always being in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong stuff, unless my mum had sort of got me to the right place at the right time with the right stuff, saying the wrong thing, you know, just feeling internal panic almost of, gosh, what's going on in this situation and how do I navigate it, and having to sort of copy other people.
Yeah.
And so I like to think at 53 that I've got a pretty good handle on most things and can back myself to deal with things. So when things go wrong, I fall straight back into that, oh, everyone will think I'm rubbish. It's a shame that that's who I really am.
Yeah.
Is that what it feels like for you?
Yeah. Well, it's a feeling, I think, for me, it's the feeling that I've let myself down. And I talked myself through that feeling of letting myself down. And I did try, actually, in a grownly coachy way, to sort of think, and this is a think, to try and affect the feeling.
Yeah.
So the thought was, how often do you get this right?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what it was?
Yeah.
It was a weekly reminder on a Saturday. That's what went off from my calendar. It wasn't my alarms as such, the ones you set, you know, all day, every day. It was a weekly one. And that's why I hadn't found it. And it was just like, oh, I didn't think to check it. Oh, kick, 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 kick.
Yeah.
Okay, you're human. You check the one thing. It's one of those things. Let's keep this in proportion. And actually, me sort of managing it at the time-ish, noticing that I was feeling pretty shitty and responsible. I mean, bless them, they kept on singing. They ignored it. So that was great. So it was a little bit of a practice for them. And it was a dress rehearsal. So it's the sort of thing that's useful, she said. But I did manage to deal with it. And then their lovely responses really helped to reinforce the fact that it wasn't the end of the world and it was okay. And actually, I do it really well most of the time. But I wouldn't have felt that a few years ago. And I know I wouldn't. I would have been ruminating and it would have been going round and round. And why did I do that? Why didn't I check this?
So it sounds like you're more able now to just go, do you know what? I made a mistake. Hey ho. That sort of...
Yes, eventually. Not in the moment it happened.
No.
I was cringing and moving. To be fair to me, I moved incredibly quickly.
Yes.
Once I realised, you know, a split second later.
Yes.
Which is one of my strengths. I do respond to things very quickly. It can also be the opposite of a strength, of course. But it showed progress, let's put it that way. So it was a good example of progress.
Yeah.
But I still had the same programme going, that shame thing.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because very similarly, I've really struggled with getting things wrong, which is ridiculous because everybody gets things wrong. But it's learning to do that sort of, do you know what? I made a mistake. There we are. And I had an incident last week when I was doing my radio show. And at the end of the show, I said goodbye to the listeners, finished the show, was playing the last song. And we have this system that it's all on called Myriad that is programmed, and it's programmed so that the news is bang on the hour and you have to keep this thing going. That is basically the broadcast. That is the radio station. And at the beginning of my show, I log into Myriad. And at the end of my show, I log out. And I was obviously a bit distracted because I was doing probably 101 other things.
Surely not.
Went to log out. And instead of clicking log out, I clicked exit. And I shut down the whole radio station.
Oops.
So I was sitting there with my headphones still on. Usually press log out. My show bit logs out, but the song keeps playing. It just went completely dead. And I was like,
oh dear.
Shit, you know, what have I done? Now, I have no idea how to open it up. I don't even know where to find it on the computer. So I thought, right, think. So I went to phone the MD of the radio station. They didn't answer. So I just did that. I'm going to click on loads of things until something that looks vaguely familiar comes up. And then it came. This thing kept saying, log into Myriad. And I was like, oh. And the thing is, you can only log in when your show is on. So my login only works between 2 and 4 p.m. on a Tuesday. If I try and log in any other time, it won't. I can't. I can log in, but I can't control it. I can't go live on it. It's on autoplay. So my show finishes at 4. By this time, it's like 3:58. So I was like, log in.
No pressure.
Please work. Frantically typing. And I got logged in. But it seemed to start my whole show from the beginning. So all of a sudden, the first opening song started playing. And I was like, oh my God, I can't click through 2 hours of show quickly. It reminds me, there's a bit in Toy Story 2 when one of the creatures is tapping to try and get through the TV channels really quickly. And I was like that. I was like, to try and get through it. And fortunately, I managed to click. I thought if I can get on the bit coming up to the news, it wouldn't go, it wouldn't work. And all of a sudden it clicked into, it was like, I could see the time saying it's 4 o'clock. And I thought, right, I've just got to go for it. Put on the one before the news and pressed go. And it just started playing.
Oh, hallelujah.
It's like, oh my God. Anyway, I logged out then without exiting. And I was telling my husband, I said, oh my God, I shut down the whole radio station. He said, have you checked it's on and playing? And I just said, no, I don't really want to know. I'll just, someone will tell me if it's not. I'm pretty sure it was because I could hear it in the studio. But I went through a moment of panic. Oh my God, the voices of you're such an idiot, you're such a failure. Oh, why have you done this? Typical you started. And then I just thought, do you know what? I've clicked the wrong button. I cannot be the only person who's clicked the wrong button. I didn't launch a bomb. I didn't eject a seat, somebody from an aeroplane. There was no ongoing. The radio station shut down for 3 minutes, 4 minutes at the most.
Yeah.
And I think I've got away with it because nobody's come after me. But it was that learning curve. Like you said, there would have been a time I would have, A, felt awful for ages and really shaken. B, felt the need to go into this huge confession. I'm a bit of a confessor if I've done something wrong.
Oh, yeah. Likewise. Yes.
Yes. I have to confess. You have to know I've got this wrong rather than sort of step back a bit and just go, you know what? I made a mistake. Hey ho. It's not the end of the world.
Would you in previous times possibly felt the shame or whatever straight away, as long as the panic, and then frozen rather than actually getting on and doing what you did? Because there can be an element of that with shame.
No, not in that circumstance. No, I think years of teaching have taught me to not freeze because you just can't when you've got 30 and upwards or a room full of people or whatever. You just can't. You just have to wing it and come up with something.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, I hope to goodness it was completely dead because my language would have shut that station down.
Yes, I can see where you're going.
It was not family friendly. I went into full on, sounded like a sailor panic mode. So, yeah, but you know, but I recovered quite quickly.
Yes.
And that is new.
Mm.
I used to lie awake at night torturing myself about things I'd said or done or perceived I'd said or done.
Mm.
And it comes back to that. It is about shame. I've got something wrong. I'm such a loser. I'm such an idiot. That's the voice. I'm such a loser. I'm such an idiot.
Mm.
And I've battled with that a lot in my adult life.
Mm. And what helped you overcome it, do you think? Just a small question.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I fully have.
No.
As
likewise.
I mean, I'll ask that question to you. Yeah, likewise. I don't think I fully have, so it would depend on what. But I think it is an ability to step. It's what we've talked before, the lens,
mm.
zooming in and zooming out, that yes, I made a mistake,
mm.
and I can either zoom in on that and it preoccupy everything I can look at, or you can zoom out and go, okay, amongst this big vista that I can see,
mm.
there is a mistake, but there's lots of non-mistakes on it.
Yes.
And actually, I know we joke about the nobody cares, but there is an element of realizing how true that is,
mm.
and that actually people make mistakes and we all just move on and that sort of get over it.
Mm.
Is actually, it sounds glib and it sounds dismissive, but there is an element of truth in it. Just the sort of, hey ho, I made a mistake.
Mm.
There we are.
Mm. I was thinking about, when we said we're going to talk about this, I was thinking about where my little program started. And I think, I mean, there may be earlier ones, but the one that stands out for me that I've actually done some work on using the havening that I use to neutralise the emotion attached to the memory. And it was when I'd just moved schools. So I'd moved at the end of the first year of secondary school, which is quite a tricky time to move because everybody's already made their friends.
Yeah.
And it was sort of towards the end of the first year that I was there. So it's the end of the second year of grammar school. And we were in the drama space, I remember, having a drama lesson or an English drama lesson type thing. And we had to read out loud, which prior to that, didn't worry me too much.
Yeah.
And I also come from a very grammatically anal family. So the grammar police, which is great because it meant that I know what I'm doing with punctuation and all that sort of stuff. So it was really useful in lots of ways. But it also meant that I wanted to get it right. I didn't want to get it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
As we were saying earlier. So I was reading out loud and the word indictment came up.
Okay.
Which, as I'm sure all our informed listeners or most of them know, and even if they don't, it's I-N-D-I-C. So it looks like indictment.
Okay.
So I read out indictment.
Oh.
And you'll like this as a teacher. The teacher laughed.
Oh, really? How awful.
And the whole class laughed because she laughed.
Yeah.
And that was my confidence down the tube, right, plummeting down the drain. Also because I was just starting to establish myself in the new school, having had to do that loads of times. I went to loads of schools before I was 12. Fortunately, this was my last new school. But I'd literally just felt like I was being part of the tribe and now suddenly they're all laughing at me. And because of the work I've done on this, I can talk about it now.
Yeah.
But like you were saying about, you know, I can't talk about this when we're in Louisville. This is something that it's that sense of shame and getting it wrong in front of everybody and embarrassment. Oh, it stayed with me for a long, long time. I can still feel there's a vestige of it now, but as I say, because I've done a lot of work on it, maybe that's why that's why I didn't go into a spiral in the church. I felt it, I was aware of it, but I think prior to maybe the 5 or 6 years that I've been working on stuff like this, I think it would have really sent me down.
How awful for that teacher to have done that. It's a horrible thing.
She's a human. I can put it in context now, but at the time, I mean, it's really, well, what do you think as a teacher?
I think it's awful.
Yeah.
It's absolutely awful. It's not appropriate at all. You know, children read things incorrectly all the time.
Mm.
And goodness me, your job is not to laugh at them. I'm not trying to be all Miss Perfect Teacher, but I would never, ever have done that.
No. I mean, It was the Middle Ages, so so I think the whole teaching universe wasn't as evolved as it is now. But
no, that's true. But I think, again, you've carried that for however many years.
Mm. Mm.
That teacher and the rest of that class
moved on. They don't care.
Probably didn't care the second after it had happened.
Exactly, exactly. But it's that cringing, squirming. You do want the ground to open up and just disappear down into it. I don't know whoever first came up with that phrase, but it's so descriptive of the feeling you have. You just want to hide. You just don't want to be there.
Absolutely. And, absolutely.
You know, I was, compared with my poor brother, whom I mentioned before, how he coped with all the moves we did, I don't know. It was one end of the country to the other and different accents and all sorts of things. And that desire to fit in, that ADHD need to fit into the tribe, to suddenly have the rug pulled out from underneath whatever I'd managed to build.
Yeah.
It's just, and that going in, that first day at school feeling that I always say, where you're, I don't know, some people will resonate with this entirely and other people may never have moved school. Well, I suppose they will have gone from one school to another, but they may have gone with their friends, with a cohort.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's what I did.
In some ways, I really wish that had happened to me and definitely for my brother.
Yeah.
Because that walking in, and even when I walked into our chorus, which I have permission to call Vocal Dimension Chorus, that's who we belong to. That first time I walked in there, I think I said to you before, I was so conscious of not being too much, but wanted to be myself.
Yeah.
And wanted to fit in and not stand out too much. But yeah, it's tricky even then.
It is. And I feel similar. You know, we've both talked about sort of starting something new as an adult. And for me, with the chorus, when I joined, absolutely the same, not wanting to be too much.
Mm.
And I would say it's only now that I feel really, I'm very me now with everybody. And the feedback you get from people is they like you being you.
Mm.
They don't mind that I'm probably the one who might make a bit of a joke about something or whatever else.
Mm.
I'm sure for some people, it probably is a bit annoying. It's like when I was a teacher and a deputy head, I did presentations or whatever in my style, in my way. You're not going to meet everybody's needs. Not everybody is going to like you.
Can I just say, I don't get the impression that anybody has a problem or finds you annoying. I'm just feeding that back.
Oh, thank you.
I think everybody thinks you're lovely because they don't know the full truth.
Give them time, Nikki.
You must try harder.
But actually, it's funny because we, as obviously you know, Nikki, for our listeners, we've just been away competing up in Sheffield. And I was responsible for booking the coach and booking the hotel and making sure everything ran smoothly. And I think that old me was very wanting to get it right. In the background, there was a real worry that I will have messed up on something. I think that's still an underlying belief that I will have made a mistake. I will have clicked the wrong thing or put the wrong date or not booked the rooms right or anything else. And so when people came back and questioned things, it made me feel defensive. And there was no need for me to be defensive because they were just asking questions because we hadn't done it before and we were all working it out as we went along. And it challenged me. But it made me step back and think, they are not challenging me from a perspective of, you're such an idiot, Carrie, you've got these things wrong. But it's, how does this work? And would it be better if we did it like this? Because we hadn't thought of everything before. We were learning as we went along. But it certainly made me quite wobbly at times.
And what did you get wrong?
In the end, I don't think anything, actually.
That was my perception from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I think it went okay.
I think it went incredibly well.
Yeah, but I think it's those things you learn, you can only learn by doing them. And I think that's maybe a strategy or not a strategy, it's encouragement to people that actually it is through the making mistakes, through the experiencing shame or worrying about it that you actually learn how to deal with it and how to process it, and you can get to the point where you have that self-awareness, can say, actually, people aren't criticizing me, they're questioning something about this, that or the other, and it's not all about me.
Absolutely not.
And in fact, actually, I had a really big breakthrough, Nikki, with something that I did the weekend before last. that I wanted to share, because it does link to all of this sort of the shame that we carry. So I did an ultra marathon. Having said I'll never run a marathon, I did that. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll do an ultra marathon.
Yes, within a couple of weeks or so of doing the marathon.
Yeah, so it was a 50K run. And don't worry, I'm not going to go on and on about the run, because that's not really what it was about, the story's about. So I was very nervous, and at the start line, and I had quite an upset tummy, which was no doubt due to nerves. I do get real pre-match anxiety. And I started to have a panic attack. I was talking to somebody, a couple of our run leaders who've done these things before, and I couldn't breathe. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to have a panic attack here, because it was very out of my comfort zone to do something like this. And I took myself off to the loos and thought, I calmed down and calmed my breathing down to the point that I could breathe. But by then I was thinking, gosh, they've either gone or I'm really holding people up. And luckily a group had waited for me. Some had to start just because the race organisers were moving people on. Anyway, started the race. And one of my running buddies had done the London Marathon a couple of weeks before, and really probably should have waited longer before he went on and did this. And at about mile six, his leg started hurting every time he put a step on it. And this is out of 31 miles. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, look, I'll run with you to the first stop that you have, a sort of fuel station. And I said, I'll run with you. We'll just slow it down a bit. Just give your leg some space. And we were chatting. And I said, look, I won't leave you behind. I'll run at the back with you. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we got to the 8 mile point. Somebody else ran with him till mile 15. I carried on running, met him at mile 15 at another fuel station. And we were chatting and everything else. And because we were chatting, we didn't really notice the others had gone off. So they'd started running, and we realised that we were sort of, oh, it's the two of us. So I said, well, I'll run with you. That's fine. And in ultra running, this was over the South Downs in the UK, which is very, very hilly at parts.
Absolutely.
So you walk all the ups. So I was expecting to walk up the hills. Only real elite athletes run up the hills. Everyone else walks up them. But then when we got to the top, he said, I don't know if I can run very far. He could run about 100 metres and then he had to walk. So for the rest of the race, so the last 15 miles, we walked the hills and we ran and walked the flat and the downhill. And part of me went into this, I'm going to end up being the last person from the club to finish. And, I could probably do it quicker than this. And, everyone's gone on and I'm going to be at the back and, that's typical me not to do it very well and all the rest of it. And I wrestled with that while I was walking and chatting with him and running with him. And then I realised I was having a really good time. He's a musician, so we were chatting about music. It was a beautiful day.
Beautiful day, wasn't it? Yeah.
Beautiful day. We're beautiful countryside. The South Downs are so beautiful. I love being in nature. I love the South Downs. And I thought, if I were with that group in front, I would probably be thinking, God, this is quite hard. I'm struggling a little bit because they are a bit faster than me. And then I'd be apologising if I felt I was slowing someone down and all the rest of it.
And there's some shame.
And the shame there. So suffice to say, this guy and I finished probably about 45 minutes after the others. Ran through the finish line. All of our club were there cheering us on. And nobody cared that we hadn't finished in the same time as us. It was just a, yay, well done. I felt absolutely fantastic. It was one of the best things I'd done. Because I hadn't run it all, I had fuel in the tank to finish. I could have carried on, I was absolutely fine. And I've had this real buzz. But then reflecting on it afterwards, I said to Ben, it made me really realise that I have spent almost my entire adult life striving. That's the only word I can use. Striving to be not shit.
Yeah. Don't be shit.
Don't be shit. Yes.
Your family motto.
Your family motto. Don't be shit. But I have been striving because that's how I was. I was chaos. Like I said, it went beyond being late and not very good at anything. I was a shambles. I really was. I could barely hold jobs down. I was unreliable. I was overly emotional. I was like blown by the wind. We've talked about this before. It happened everywhere. And as I've got older and got things together more and grown and learned about myself and calmed, it's almost like I've had this Wonder Woman complex where I've had to prove I can do it. And not just I can do it, I can do it really well. Everything has to be done really, really well. You know, I don't like not being good at something. I don't like not being great.
Sorry, can I just ask, prove to whom?
Well, that's part of it, isn't it? I feel like I've got to show everybody, but maybe it's show myself. I don't know. I've just felt that I've got to put this out. And it's linked very much with that. Don't get anything wrong. You know, don't turn up and my house is chaos, because that everyone will peep behind the curtain of the, you know, like the Wizard of Oz, and see that there's...
What, you mean they don't?
But do you know what I mean? It was the Wizard of Oz. You know, they'll find out that actually behind the curtain, there's just this really average, dull person. And so I've striven. And it's what Ben has spoken about a lot. You never let things lie. You're always pushing on. You're always trying to improve. You always have to achieve. And over the course of this run, I learned that I didn't have to. I learned that if you are striving, you miss some of the fun.
You do.
And you miss the journey and the ride and the other things that can come along. The camaraderie with people. I met really interesting people who were also walking and running that we chatted to. And I feel like it's really shaken off something that I've been carrying for a long time.
Hang on a second. Woohoo! I hope that wasn't too loud on the microphone.
Thank you.
That's fabulous.
It's huge. It's a really huge thing to let go of like, I've got to be perfect. I've got to be the best. I can't let anybody see that actually I'm not one, you know. Yeah, even Wonder Woman sometimes is just Diana Prince, or whatever her name is. I think it is that.
Clark Kent, yes.
Even she is Diana. You know, even Superman is Clark Kent sometimes. But I, you know, they don't stay as Superman and Wonder Woman. But I was like, I've got to be Wonder Woman all the time. But you know what? My cape's in the wash, Nikki.
Hurrah! How fabulous. Oh, God, it's made me think of... two horse stories, if I may.
Oh,
I know.
Horse, as in clip clop.
Horse, as in clip clop.
Okay.
Yes, as in yes, Neddy. Shall I cut that bit out? No, I'm going to leave it in. So, one is a negative-ish, and one is a positive. So, I was learning to ride when I was 27, and I grew up being terrified of large animals. My mum was, and so it sort of transferred to me, and. They're very large animals. And I did discover via a friend who had a horse that actually sitting on the horse was less scary than standing next to it, because the hooves and the teeth are further away in a way. So I thought, I'm going to learn to ride because I love doing things that scare, to use your word, the shit out of me.
Yes.
So I thought, right, I'm going to tame this fear. I love taming fears. So I thought, right, okay. So I started having lessons. And I went along, and I remember going around the, you know, they have the indoor school where you all go around, and it was a group lesson. So there were about 8 of us. And this lovely teacher, she was really nice, called Tina, was standing in the middle like the ringmaster. And at one point she looked at me and she said, Nikki, you're not trying. And I stopped my horse. Yes, I could see on your face, does not compute. No. So I stopped my horse and I've got a bright red face, not from what she'd said, but just from exertion. And I looked at her and said, Tina, you can never level that one at me. I try too hard.
Yeah.
I'm excellent at trying too hard in life. It's my best thing.
Yes.
Striving. Exactly what you say.
Strive, strive.
And she said, well, in that case, relax more. And I said, well, yes, exactly. I'd love to. But I mean, you know, I did eventually learn to relax more when I got more competent. So there you go. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, and the analogy I use with my clients sometimes is, if you're holding on really tightly to the reins, then the horse gets really unsettled, doesn't think you know what you're doing, and will act out and start eating the shrubbery or whatever, or stopping and you flying over the head. So if you relax your hands, the horse thinks you're more in control and you actually are.
Yeah.
The relaxing thing is so important for me. It's one of the major lessons of my life, and I manage it intermittently.
Yeah.
I suppose I relax slightly in the church, considering. But the other one is a story that's, and I don't know how relevant it, oh no, it is relevant because it could have been a real shameful experience for me. I was in Australia when I was about early 30s, and I was backpacking, and it was wonderful. I was just feeling really free, staying in different places every night. And I arrived at one backpacker's in Mackay, near the Barrier Reef, and I threw my stuff on the bed, and the woman who was running the backpackers came in and said, "Oh, Bramby Bob." Bramby is like a horseman, a bit like a gaucho. So Bramby Bob's coming in a minute. Do you want to go on a horse ride on the beach? And I thought, okay, yes. So off we went. And there were about a dozen people on this horse ride. And there was a woman who'd been called Nicola, who'd been riding since she was about three. And I'd been riding for about 2 years, having lots of lessons. So I looked as if I knew what I was doing, even though I didn't really. And then everybody else who'd probably never ridden before. Okay, so I was the second best. Who knew? So off we went, and we ended up going along the beach. It was all lovely. And we ended up above, sort of quite high. And there were these big gashes in the hillside that were full of sand going straight down. And we're standing at the top on our horses, standing at the top of these things. And Bramby Bob said, "Okay, you can do the small slide or you can do the big one."
Right, I'm going to read your mind. You went for the big one.
Well, I didn't do anything. I was sitting there thinking, baby me, you know, I'm just about getting used to not being next to the hooves and the teeth, you know, mostly. So anyway, this lady, Nicola, who was an excellent horsewoman, she was just brilliant. She's got a hat on, you know, like the Aussie Akubra hat. Yeah. And she took it off and she did like the John Wayne thing.
Yeah.
She's neck reining, so she's holding the reins in one hand,
yeah.
Right? Not like me, with two. And she put her hat in the air and she went, "Yeah!" and sort of slapped the horse's rump. And off they went down this thing. And it was really steep. I mean, really steep. I'm showing you on this thing. It's like 45 degrees.
Oh, wow.
And she was standing up in the stirrups with one hand holding the reins. This is relevant. With her hat up in the air with the other hand. And she got down it. And it was just a beautiful, poetic thing to watch. So I stand there and I go, "Oh, sod it." So off we go down the big slide. Stupidly, I didn't follow her lead. I held on with both reins, which meant that inexorably the horse's rump is hitting you up your rump and you start losing balance. So you start moving further and further forward. And eventually I jackknifed or piked, I think the word is. So I'm standing with my legs straight in the stirrups, sort of on the horse's shoulder. That makes me laugh at this. And they're all standing at the bottom by now. Okay, so for some reason, I can't remember how this worked. But anyway, they were at the bottom of these slopes. All the other 10 people, plus Bramby Bob and Nicola, because she'd gone down first. So I'm now descending in the most inelegant fashion possible with my bum in the air. And I have my arms around the horse's head. And I'm looking in the horse's eye from about 3 inches. And I got this vision of it. And one thing I am really good at is laughing at myself before anybody else. As long as I'm not being laughed at. You know.
Yes, agreed.
And the trouble is, when I laugh a lot, I go very weak. And all I could do was hang on. I mean, that was it, all the way down. But I did manage to recover at the bottom, and I managed to do like a poor imitation of a Russian dismount, holding onto the horse's head. And everybody was laughing. I mean, everybody's cracking up. I could have gone into a massive shame spiral over that. But I found something to laugh at because my sense of the ridiculous that I shared with my mum and partners. And if you can laugh at yourself, that is such a
gift.
I totally, totally agree. And I think actually, like with the radio show and things like that, I was able to come home and tell it to Ben as a sort of, "So, guess who shut down the whole radio station?" So. But I think that is a strategy.
It is.
Because you and I both like a laugh. And I think I've always been quite a mischievous, cheeky monkey. I do like to have a bit of a laugh. I do see the funny side in things. But on the other end of the scale, I can take things really over seriously.
Mm.
And so it's being able to sort of use some of my finding it funny about situations that I don't naturally find funny.
Yes.
So like you, if I fall over or something like that, I am able to laugh at myself. I don't take myself too seriously. But if I think I've made a mistake, that's when the shame comes in. And so actually being able to bring in, like you say, a bit of that laughter and go, "Oh God, what am I like?" sort of attitude can be really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
so much of this, as we've said, you know, whatever it is, comes from this shame from being young and this desire to strive and be excellent.
Mm. Can I just say one thing? When I was having coaching, my lovely coach, Pam, she was coaching me on something, and it was something that was really, I felt very shameful about at my drum teacher's wedding and thinking I'd join in with the people on the stage because I knew three of the four of them and, you know, it would be fine. And then I got this little voice, oh no, don't go up, don't push yourself forward. And in the end I did. And so I was a bag of nerves by that, and I sent a music stand flying as I climbed over. And Owen, the guy who was the lead singer, was sort of looking at me like, what are you doing? He was a lovely guy. Anyway, so then my leg went to sleep and I lost my leg. You know, when you say your leg goes to jelly, it did. And it gave me the start of stage fright, which I then had to recover from. Anyway, I was working on this with Pam a couple of years ago. And so we went through all the NLP processes and it was all terribly serious and we sorted it out. And then she said, she's so good. She said, Nikki, I said, yeah. She said, that must all have been very entertaining for the audience. And she helped me just see it from a totally different point of view and my sense of the ridiculous. And actually, it was really funny. And I just burst out laughing and I said, Pam, you've just earned your money. And that's the sort of reframe. That's exactly what you were just saying. If you can find something funny in the situation, it just scribbles all over the memory and rewrites it for you, reframes it.
Absolutely. Well, if you think, there was a lady last week competing and went on stage and fell over.
Oh, yes, she did. Yes.
And she jumped up and went, I'm okay, and carried on. Everyone cheered. And
with a flourish of her arm.
With a flourish. Yes. And it was
a bonding moment.
And then everyone laughed and it just let everyone let go. And it didn't matter. And
no.
I hope she didn't go home and beat herself up about it.
I don't think she would. I mean, the point is, I'd forgotten about it till you said
yes,
then.
That's yeah.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Oh, well, it's an interesting one, shame, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, I think we're both finding ways. This is work in progress, as ever.
100%.
But hopefully bits of that might be useful, or at least fun.
Yes, definitely.
Feel free to laugh with me.
Oh, God, that was funny. Picturing you on that horse is going to be with me for a while.
I can still see, you don't know how big a horse's eyes until you're that close to it. He was looking at me like, a bit like actually the guy in the band that I was just talking about, like, what are you doing? You're not meant to be doing this.
classic.
All right, Gary. Well, thanks very much. And looking forward to catching up in a couple of weeks or so.
Brilliant. Take care, Nikki.
And you.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks so much for joining us on our ADHD journey. If you can spare a sec, a review or ranking would be hugely appreciated by us. 5 stars would be marvellous, but whatever you think. Every single one really does help. As well as on your favourite app, you can find us on YouTube and Instagram at theADHDConnection_podcast. So we hope to see you on there. Thanks again for listening, and bye for now.